Well, interesting introduction from Amy. Thinking through, like, why do we do what we do? What do we work for? That sort of success or failure paradigm, contrasting with wisdom and foolishness. Thinking about why we do what we do, a phrase I hear around and probably I've used myself is, I don't live to work, but I work to live. Not sure if that's something that resonates with you, perhaps something that you've sprouted at various points. But why we do what we do, it's a question that we often ask ourselves at the end of a tough week. Why am I doing this? When we're being performance managed by our organisation or we're obviously struggling to achieve targets, why do I do what I do? When our pay packet doesn't really cover all of our bills, that sort of question, why am I doing this? Now, I reckon at most points in history and in many places across the globe today, people don't have the kind of luxury to ask these kind of questions. People work because they need to eat. People work because they need to feed their families. But for many of us, we expect more from our work, don't we? We want to work on something that can last, because it helps us give a sense of purpose. We want to work and be recognised and at some level rewarded because it sort of validates that what we're doing is valuable. We want to work and not just sort of see our pay just immediately wasted away, but have a sense that our work can lead to something that is not only a blessing to us, but to others. In our long and pivotal passage today, Jesus talks about work that lasts. And he invites us to the kind of work that he's pleased with, work that is both significant and lasting. And he invites all people, all of us, to hunger for this work. Now, John chapter 6 gives an account of one of Jesus' most famous signs. It's a sign that multitudes benefited from, rather than some of the other healings that are very specific and personal. This was a sign that Jesus was offering something for many, many people. Jesus was offering a provision that lasts. Now, I've generally found that feeding people is a great way to connect. People are happy to listen to you when you're happy to feed them. And so what we see is that Jesus, having provided this great meal, this major sign, has done so that those who are around him, verse 26, would listen to what he has to say. Having had their fill, Jesus has got their ears. And so what is the key message that Jesus brings in the midst of this famous miracle? Have a look at verse 27. Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. For on him God the Father has placed his seal of approval. We see here clearly what Jesus desires we would do. Jesus desires that we would do things that are significant and lasting. And what Jesus sort of goes about to unpack in his discussion here is that he's worth working for because he's the Son of Man. And now often people talk about working for the man, like an organization, rather than working for themselves. And I guess as sort of people where that's an option, perhaps in various professions, they sort of weigh up the benefit. Do I want to work for that person or that organization or work for myself? And I guess when we sort of get to know someone and we see someone's character manifested in their interactions and their decisions, we sort of work out pretty quickly, is this person worth working for? Is this organization and its culture something that I want to be a part of? And so Jesus here is outlining that he's someone who is worth working for. And so chapter 6 begins with this sort of large crowd of people who think he's worth following, worthy of their attention, worthy of their time. We read in verse 4 that he's been teaching and healing, and it's nearly time for the Passover. And again, Jesus is doing miracles on specific occasions to point towards his identity. And so the Passover was that annual remembrance of the great Exodus in the past when God had delivered his people from slavery in Egypt. And Jesus sees this as the perfect time to show that how worthy he really is. So we've got the bulging crowds. The catering question has been solved by Jesus. And so just like then Moses in the wilderness provides, or God provides the manna for his people while they're in transit, Jesus has sort of collected these rare resources, the loaves and the fish. He's given thanks, and then he's filled the multitude. And so the crowd is so impressed with what Jesus has performed. We see in verse 18 that they're trying to really narrow in on his identity. And the most obvious line of thought is that he is the prophet that Moses had promised all those years back. In Deuteronomy 18, Moses himself passes on a promise from God that there would be another prophet beyond him. And so God's people had been expectant of when this prophet would come and God's promises would be realized. And so seeing Jesus, experiencing the provision that Jesus has just given them, there's excitement. Here is the new Moses. He's going to deliver us from our current slavery. But they seem a little bit confused. They seem concerned to look backward, but Jesus is wanting to point them forward. He wasn't just going to be the modern-day Moses who was going to provide for them physically on a daily provision. No. Jesus wants to point them forward to a provision not just for daily needs, but for eternal provision. And so we see in verse 15, they're very positive about Jesus. It says they want to make him king. It doesn't seem that they're wanting to respect him as his identity would worth. They're trying to make him king, it says, by force. Thankfully, Jesus, as always, dancing to the beat of his own drum, he just quietly withdraws. And then from verse 16, Jesus again casts his disciples' eyes forward. He doesn't want them to just think of another Moses, someone who's vastly different to Moses. You see, Jesus isn't just better than Moses, he's different. Moses, to bring about the Exodus, was able to, through God's hand, part the Red Sea and then walk through it on dry ground. But this account in John chapter 6 of Jesus walking on top of the water is to show that he is not just better than Moses, but he's vastly different. Jesus is, in fact, God enfleshed. In the Old Testament, in Job chapter 9, we read that God alone who stretches out the heavens, he's the one who treads on the waves of the sea. It's only God who can overcome the barriers of our physical world. And Jesus is in fact doing it because he has the very same power as God the Father. And so he commands his disciples, don't be afraid. And that's the obvious response in the midst of an awesome identity, to be afraid at the power that is in your midst. But Jesus is showing his power because he's showing that he's someone who's worth working for. Now, despite these public displays that affirm his worth, there are still questions. And so in verse 24, you know, is this not Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? Now, people hear Jesus' claim of being sent from heaven and they seem to dismiss it impossible. They did it then and we do it now too. And so what we are reminded here is that any of us, when we meet Jesus, we don't just meet a peer or a colleague. He's not some trainee or new grad at our workplace that we can show a thing or two. To meet Jesus is to meet the very bread that has come down from heaven, the only one who gives life to this world. So I think Jesus has clearly shown that he is worth working for. But I guess the question is, what is the work that the Son of Man gives? Well, it seems like an obvious question, and it's the question that we hear from the disciples in verse 28. Then they asked him, what must we do to do the works of God? Jesus answered, the work of God is this, to believe the one he has sent. That's the work, believing. Okay, if we think about that, okay. I believe my boss, that sort of makes sense. If I'm going to work for my boss, I would believe that they're knowledgeable, that they know what they're doing, so then I would be compliant in what they ask. Believe that they're trustworthy, that doing the work they ask will be good. believe by listening. That seems fair enough. But surely there's the next step. Surely the works that God requires of us aren't just believing. What is it that I'm going to do? Well, again, Jesus' word, the work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent. Now, maybe on initial reading we think, well, believing can't be that hard, can it? Believing Jesus, yeah, I'm up for that. Shouldn't take too long. But believing is work, because belief is a daily adventure. To believe is to trust Jesus' words, that he's the one who's worthy for us to live for. Belief is trusting Jesus' work, that he alone is the bread who can feed us. Belief is trusting that Jesus provides everything that we need that will not only sustain us in this life, but more significantly for the life to come. Friends, it's really important that we get this clear, that as we come to Jesus, what does he require of us? Well, he's not asking, what are you going to do for me? But he's asking whether we will trust in what he has done for us. Have a look at verse 53. Very truly I tell you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life. You have no life in you. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I'll raise them up at that last day. You see, belief is trusting that Jesus' death was for our sin, trusting that Jesus' blood cleanses us of the guilt that is attached to our actions. Jesus doesn't come to us asking, what are you going to do for me? But he comes asking whether we will trust in what he has done. Trusting in what he has done will be seen in what we do and how we live. But Jesus here primarily is offering to feed us. To feed us, to give us a new purpose for the new life that is found in him. And so whilst belief might seem a little bit too easy, it's actually the kind of work that you can't clock on and off from. Belief is work that gives you a new purpose in all aspects of life. Jesus later summarizes it as loving God and loving others. Believing that God is worthy himself of receiving our love. Loving him when it would just be easier to love ourselves. To grow in not only loving God, but loving the things that God loves. And so it will be seen as we obey him rather than give in to our fleshly desires. It'll be seen in obedience to him rather than just doing what everyone else around us says is okay. When we start working for what lasts, our life will be different. And it is vastly different to our modern mantra that I work to live. You know that statement? I don't live to work, I work to live. But that really means I work so that I can do whatever else I want with my life and no one can really say anything about it. It's sort of the mindset that I work hard so I can play hard. But working for the Son of Man is how we manifest belief in all aspects of life, and Jesus says this is the work that will actually last. This work of believing in his words, trusting in his work, believing his word in loving God and loving others. It'll be seen in our interactions with other people. We'll love others when they're perhaps not even loving us back, because that is the model of our loving Father. And that's exhausting, but it's the kind of work that lasts. It'll be seen as we love God and stand up for truth and his name. It can be very costly when other people despise or at the best don't value that. But this is the kind of work that lasts. This is the work that the Son of Man gives those
who believe him. And Jesus says, this is work that doesn't spoil or fade, but work that carries on. And I think if we stop and reflect for all of us here, it's probably the kind of work that we all deeply yearn for, isn't it? We want our work to be meaningful and lasting. But work that is just of the flesh is limited. You see, death is an end for all of us, despite the quality of our work or the quantity of the work that we store up or output in our lifetime. And just like the manna in the wilderness, there was a limit, a mortality. But Jesus is offering something that truly lasts. And so if Jesus here is sort of putting out a job ad for the kind of work that he's inviting all people to participate in, I wonder whether it's the kind of job that you'd want to apply for. This work of belief. Belief in his words, belief in his work. To participate in work that is lasting, that is life-giving. If you've come to Jesus in believing that he is the one sent from the Father, who is Lord of all, and you invite him to be Lord of you, then your life is now filled with this work of belief in all aspects of life. And Jesus says it's work that lasts. But if that's you today, you've been trusting in Jesus for the last year, 5 years, decades, I wonder how hungry you are to participate in this work of belief. Because as is often the case, when you start a new job, it's all sort of exciting and challenging. But when that honeymoon's over, often work, no matter how important and invigorating it is, it can just be a bit of a slog, can't it? It's easy to just go through the motions, or our modern day sort of quiet quitting, where we just start just being compliant very specifically to our job description and just unwilling to participate in anything beyond that. And so too, we can easily start going through the motions with Jesus. Not living with a hunger to do the work that he has prepared for us, this work of belief. Belief that's shaping every aspect of our life. You see, it's easy to stop believing that Jesus' work for us is sufficient and to become obsessive that what really matters is our productivity and our efficiency, even for the kingdom. It can be tempting to not believe in the completeness of Jesus' work when we're confronted with our own mistakes and our sin, and our response, rather than feeding on him, is to just think, I just need to try harder and do better. It's easy to stop believing that Jesus' words, that he is the bread of life who provides for us fully, when it seems that all of our physical needs aren't quite being met, so we, rather than feed on him, just push and push and push. Jesus feeds us spiritually so we will be hungry for the work that he gives us, this work of belief. And he feeds us sufficiently so we won't, as he says, hunger or thirst. But on the other hand, our work is believing in that truth, and so we're invited to keep asking him to give us our daily bread. Or as we see in our passage today, give us this bread always. And so Jesus isn't promising that we'll be fully satisfied in all aspects of life. I think he's clear that there's going to be obvious deficiencies. There's going to be experiences where we are lacking. Whereas our society wants us to push for having clarity and certainty in every aspect of our life, with our health, in our relationships, for our finances, and in our housing, it's actually in the uncertainty of these things where we experience in real and clear ways that we are lacking, that we have the opportunity to be fed by Jesus rather than feeding ourselves, to be sustained by him rather than providing for ourselves. It's this invitation, this plea that God, help me to hold on to your promises even though everything in my life is shouting against their reality. Father, please provide for my tangible physical needs, my housing, my health. This is a countercultural way of living, I think. I think most in our culture would say this is quite a naive approach to life. Perhaps even people might say this is reckless. Because all the messaging we get from our consumer-focused society is that within us we have the capacity to provide for ourselves. We, in fact, have the responsibility to provide for our every need. That our only confidence in living in this broken world is to insure ourselves against any kind of misfortune, and it's on us to do that kind of work. But to feed on Jesus, to do the work of belief that he has fed us for, is to trust him in situations of real uncertainty, in those seasons of life that are genuinely unstable. Now, it's not that we sort of pursue uncertainty or insufficiency in our daily needs, but certainly it's not just resorting to hopelessness or despair in them either. Friends, I think it is in our actual deficit, in the face of real disappointment, that we have an opportunity to clearly and tangibly be sustained by the words and work of Jesus. So, friends, I wonder if there's an element of deficit that's right in your face today. An area in your life that is unstable. Friends, I think Jesus presents that as an opportunity for belief. And he invites you to come to him with this plea: give us this bread always. You see, the good news in what Jesus has provided is that he has given us ultimately what we need. And so not only is he the one who is really worthy for us to work for, not only is he giving us this work of belief that lasts eternally, but we also have the great insight in this passage that he is good. Have a look at verse 39 and 40. To reveal the heart of God. And this is the will of him who sent me, that I shall lose none of all those he has given me, but raise them up at that last day. For my Father's will is that everyone who looks to the Son and believes in him shall have eternal life, and I'll raise them up at that last day. Friends, how rich are these words, that the Father's will is that everyone believes. None whom have been given to Jesus will be lost. But working for the Son of Man has the security that you will be raised up. God isn't just offering us food, but he's making sure that we get it. Verse 37, all that the Father gives me will come to me, and whoever comes to me, I will never drive away. Do you feel the comfort of those words? If you're unsure, if you do believe, if you're concerned that you can't believe, we see here that God provides Jesus as the food and the drink, the sustenance that we need, and then he leads us towards him. It's probably the difference between feeding a teenager and a little baby. The teenager, you go to the grocery store, you buy the ingredients, you put them in the pantry and they just vanish. But like a 18-month-year-old, you can't just go to the store, buy the little mush stuff, leave it in the pantry and expect them to eat it. You have to open it up, you have to prepare it, you have to spoon it in, and then they grab the spoon and they flick it. You have to wipe it off their face and you get it in there. That's the kind of attention that God gives to his people. He's given us Jesus, and then he draws us towards him. Whoever comes to Jesus, he will never drive away. Jesus really reiterates this point in verse 44, that no one comes unless I draw them. It's literally like, unless I drag them. God is the one who opens our eyes and provides faith to trust in what he's done. And the promise is that he never lets go of those whom he draws to himself. It's like a parent who loses their toddler and then they find the toddler and then the embrace is almost like a vice. Our good God feeds us and he cares for us. And so when we are confronted with our deficit, with our own sin, friends, this is an opportunity to feed on this bread that lasts, this bread that brings forgiveness for what we have done. When we are confronted with a prognosis that is poor, aware that our memory is just muddled, when our chronic pain is overwhelming and debilitating, friends, this is opportunity to cry out, feed me, always with this bread. Or when you're at that stage of life where you've got a new baby and you feel like each day is just survival, productivity is non-existent, be hungry to do this work of belief that lasts. It's an opportunity then to just pursue thankfulness and praise for this precious child rather than dwell in frustration, animosity, or despair. The work of God is to believe in the one he sent, believe in his work and believe in his words. Our God is a God who loves everyone. So when you're at that work function and there's sort of these people that you could be networking with, people who are perhaps more beneficial for your career progression or just even more interesting to talk to, what will you do? What is the work that lasts? Well, perhaps it's trusting God with your career prospects. Perhaps it's engaging in conversations with those whom God has put around you. Perhaps even having that conversation and drawing near to that person that frustrates you, or value that person within your organisation that has no status and no one really gives two hoots about. To do this work of loving God and loving others, it will be draining and costly, but we have an open invite to the eternal banquet where we will be fed and sustained and nourished. And so as we come across seasons of life where we are lacking, we are invited again and again and again and again and again to feed on Jesus. And so, friends, this isn't just a spiritual, abstract, theoretical concept.